Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
All right, folks, we're going to talk to you today about Blue Apron. They are a sponsor for Marvel Movie News, and Blue Apron is delicious.
Yes, it is.
I can say without too strong a bias, because I have bought it and have been sponsored by it, so I have given my good money to these lovely folk, and they send you this amazing, like, refrigerated box of science, and all the food is, like, portioned out exactly, so you can feel like a master chef without learning anything. Yeah. You can, like, show off.
Yeah, whereas it's like, really? You need like a spatula, a pan, and some olive oil. And then you're set. Oh, salt and pepper.
That's true.
Salt
that's fair. Let's taste. Be realistic.
But otherwise than that, like, you can get your, for me, my one woman war against salmon. You can get that on, like, no problem. And in many different ways, something I really appreciate with Blue Apron is like, you'd never really have the same thing twice.
Yeah, they change their meals up constantly. They email you what the variations are going to be, and you select your meals. So every time you dive into a box of Blue Apron, it's what you've picked, and it's always different. And I love the fact that it's so sustainable. Like, they use local, organic, self-sustaining foods. They really care about the community. You can send the boxes back, so you're not even, like, worrying about the crazy chemicals that are in that magical fridge box. Like, these people take care of, they leave the smallest footprint possible, and the meals break down to, like, $10 per person. So it's not prohibitively expensive. And through us, if you go to blueapron.com/Marvel, it's even cheaper, because you get 20% off and free shipping. So it's an amazing deal.
And if you check out this week's menu, you could get your first three meals free.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Like, with free shipping.
Like, so there's no reason. Yeah. There's literally no reason not to. Use that code, get your first three meals free, plus free shipping. And if you're just cooking for yourself, either you eat a lot or find someone to share it with. Make a friend. Go feed the local homeless person the most delicious meal. And there's really no losing here, because it's three meals free. And if you don't like it, just cancel. If you do like it, when you do like it, it's very inexpensive and it's locally sourced.
Yeah, which is, it's all the good things.
Yeah.
You know, and I have tried other, subscription services. I tried, should I name them here?
We should not speak ill of others.
I've tried others, and I will say that the proportions, the freshness, and then the recyclability of Blue Apron is what gets me back.
So check them out, blueapron.com/Marvel. First three meals free and free shipping through us. Thanks, guys. Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming. This is Marvel Movie News. Thanks.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Marvel Movie News.
Excelsior to you, our merry Marvelites.
Yes.
We are the Marvel Movie News, and we are coming to you live from Midtown High, which was executed beautifully.
Of course we are. Oh my God. God,
nowhere
I
else
loved
we could come
Midtown
from.
High.
It was perfect. This is episode 138. We are the Merry Marvelites. We are representing you lovelies, a show by us for you every week. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find us on youtube.com/Popcorn Talk Network. You can find us on Popcorn Talk's website. Follow us on Twitter at Marvel News PTN or at The Popcorn Talk. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Marvel News Show. Follow us, like us, and if you retweet us while we're live, while we're chatting, telling people to join us in the live chat, not Doom, but Aunt Manthony in the booth will retweet you. I got through all that so I could talk about the greatest thing to happen in my life in years, Spider-Man Homecoming. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to have that be the end of the show. I think we'll do spoilers. We're going to go all the way. It's been out for almost a week.
But we're going to be so in-depth with it. We're just going to roll. It's going to be great.
We're going to dive in hard once we get there. But for those of you that haven't seen the show, the beginning is fair game. We're going to avoid spoilers. We're going to avoid Spider-Man until, like, the last half of the show. So we're going to get through the news. We weren't here last week, so we got 2 weeks worth of news. But none of it matters as much as Spider-Man Homecoming. So pardon me if we rush. I am joined, as always, by the lovely Marquia McCarty. Where can they find you?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Markeia McCarty. That's MarkeiaMccarty. Snapchat, Darth Thinmints. Darth is in Vader. Thinmints is in Girl Scout cookies. I'm just realizing that I do not do the Snapchat as much as I should, but I did over 4th of July when I shouldn't have. So, enjoy.
Snapchat, always a good...
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Self-reflection. So this week, we, like I said, we have a couple weeks worth of news. It's all very small stuff, especially in relation to Spider-Man.
Very small stuff.
But leading up to Comic-Con, there will be a lot of cool news. And speaking of Comic-Con and exclusives, we have this gloriousness.
Look at this glorious. Okay, for our iTunes and podcasts that are listening people, we have here a metal miniature. It is part of 500. There's only 500 of these being made. And of course, it's Black Panther. And I'm holding it right now, just so you know. And he's amazing. He's die-cast. It's a metal miniature. And he's poised to strike. And it is absolutely fantastic. As you can see, he has... yeah, it's the Black Panther costume from the movie. And you're just feeling it. You feel T'Challa. You feel Black Panther. You feel the earnestness that comes with this. And this is number 99 out of the 500. And this was sent to us by Tommy Vargas of Factory Entertainment. Now you go to Factory Entertainment, or it's factoryent.com, and you can see a number of their SDCC exclusives that you could purchase when you go to San Diego Comic-Con. And we will have another one of these miniatures of a completely different type that is a complete surprise from the rest of the panel, because I'm not telling them, but we will show that next Tuesday. So thank you for this. And yes, this is going home with me. So we know.
Surprise,
we
know this. That is the coveted Black Panther. So Comic-Con's coming up. We're going to have more talks of Comic-Con leading into things. We talked a little bit on it today, but we're going to have more announcements as we get closer. And then, of course, while we're down there. And I'm really stoked. It actually, like, stuff like this makes it feel like Comic-Con. Like, Comic-Con always feels like this, like, summer. So now that we have exclusives, now that we have things gearing up, it feels like it's here. We're full summer.
Yeah. Oh, and special shout out to Johnny LaQuasto of DC Movie News. That was the one that was like, hey, you need this in your life. And I was like, I do need this. What is Factory Entertainment? And now I know this.
Yeah, that thing is
so
rad.
Hey, that Marvel DC love here on Popcorn Talk is real, y'all.
We're sharing it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to let Marquia open with Black Panther since I was leading the show, but since now we have Black Panther Deadpool 2. Now, Deadpool showed some really cool love to Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman passed another Wonder Woman tangent. Wonder Woman passed Deadpool in the box office this week, and Ryan Reynolds shared this beautiful image of the bond between studios. We got some Marvel, Fox, Wonder Woman love. And he said, basically, you know, Deadpool's a nastier, but Wonder Woman's BO is stronger, which was very cleverly phrased and enjoyed. But I love that he stays in character throughout. I love that there's no animosity. I love that, like, these movies are all making all the money, and these studios are just sharing in the love. So congrats to Wonder Woman, and this made me laugh. Also in Deadpool 2, over the last 2 weeks, some news broke. The Hunt for Wilder People's, the young lead of Hunt for Wilder People is in Deadpool 2. I'm not
there
sure,
go.
Like, what
oh
a great announcement photo.
Yes!
I'm not sure who he's playing. Julian Dennison from Hunt for Wilder People was hilarious.
Yeah,
was...
the photo is, he's riding piggyback on Deadpool.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
That's how you announce a cast member.
Yes.
Like, piggyback.
That's how everyone should announce
every
cast members.
Every single Cable should be also have been announced. Just Josh Brolin riding Deadpool. So, I mean, I loved that movie. It was one of my favorites of last year. It's really funny. The humor is very specific. And the director, of course, is doing Thor Ragnarok, which also looks weird and crazy. So this announcement photo was last week. And going forward, I think he's going to be kind of the anti-Negasonic. I think Negasonic was like, I don't care about Deadpool. Like, I don't want it. I think he's going to be like the biggest Deadpool fanboy.
He's going to be huge.
That's my theory.
But will he be a mutant?
I don't think so. I think he's just going to be, I personally think he's just be obsessed with Deadpool.
Oh my god. I would love for him to have a mutant power of something, and it's a mutant power that is not great to have.
Something useless.
But it'd be in one case, it'd work out really
well.
Oh
yeah, the third act where you need the one kid.
Exactly.
The trope. If any movie can do a trope that like 80s cliched, it's this one. So I mean, we'll see. Yeah. We're gonna stay with Fox. The biggest news that broke while we were gone is Fox announced 6 release dates over the next few years.
Yikes.
6 of them. Now,
yikes.
We know we have another X-Men.
Yes.
We know we have, but Deadpool 2 can't be one of these because Deadpool 2 is next year. These release dates are for the future. So Deadpool 2 is out of the running. Perhaps Deadpool 3, maybe X-Force, but the fact they announced six Marvel Fox release dates going through 2021 is crazy to me. Like, were you expecting that? That's so much.
Well, it's interesting that they did that, like, right before Comic-Con.
Yeah, why not,
you know?
Wait a week?
I don't know. Like, because they could have done it where, you know, there's Comic-Con, maybe do it during Comic-Con, mm-hmm. like, give us a little bit during Comic-Con, like, maybe three of them, and then after Comic-Con be like, oh, by the way.
There's more.
There is this.
And maybe they'll announce what they are at Comic-Con, or one
maybe,
or two.
Maybe. But
they
want
to get the hype out, and then,
it
like.
It just seems like a, you know, Christmas, there's Christmas, and then there's pre-Christmas, and then there's this is like, you know.
This is like Thanksgiving presents?
Yeah, Thanksgiving
it's
presents.
Just the holidays?
Yeah.
It's weird because it is next week, effectively. It's 2 weeks. This, so the dates are June 7th, 2019, November 22nd, 2019, March 13th, 2020, June 26th, 2020, October 2nd, 2020, and March 5th, 2021. Now, that is two strong summer dates, a really coveted Thanksgiving date, and then a couple March dates. Now, Deadpool did really well with its February release, but it played on that, like, the marketing played with the fact that it was Valentine's Day. It played with like, brilliantly. Those billboards were amazing.
You know, he was a pervy mannequin. What are you
going to
do? You
could release that movie, like, the he
and the
words
of Jessica Jones on Twitter.
Yes, yes. So you can make any holiday work with these characters. What are these March dates? Like, what is that October date? Like, do you think they're going to tie in what the type of the movie is to the date? Do you think these dates are telling?
I don't think you can. I don't think so.
Well, summer blockbusters are usually going to be the bigger, the spectacles.
Yeah, but I mean for those March dates, though.
The March dates, I think, are going to be the more harder sells.
Yeah.
Like, Deadpool was an unknown quantity. We knew it was going to be bananas, but, like, studios didn't know that there was going to be a billion-dollar film, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think the March dates are going to be the films that are a little bit less expensive, a little bit trickier sell, the ones they need a little more freedom and wiggle with, is my theory. But what are they? Like, what is Fox possibly doing six movies with?
I don't know, but I know that it seems like everybody's getting cast and everything like willy-nilly right now, so it's...
It's ramping up.
Yeah, it is. It is. And you would think by this point, I mean, when we, you know, rewind back when, remember, like, phase two.
Yeah.
You know, and we would think by now, like, oh, it'd be oversaturated, you know, they're
Spider-Man
not really feeling
not,
it.
Which we'll get to.
We're going to get to that. And now it's just like, wow, yeah, no, there's going to be this whole different generational turn that's going to happen for everything else.
Because we're coming up on the kids that were young when the first movies came out are now adults. And then the people that were, like, adults are, like, it's, we're hitting that 10-year
mark. Those 10-year-olds are now 20.
Right. So, the generation gap is happening. So this next, I remember when they announced, like, two release dates, it was huge. Now there's six. And it's, that's just Fox Marvel. That's just Fantastic Four X-Men. So, I mean, at least a couple of those are probably from Fantastic Four. But, like, what is the rest?
Has to be before 2020.
Right.
So,
at least one of those is that maybe young Fantastic Four thing that's happening. I don't know. I want to hear your guys' theories. What do you guys think these six dates are? I think at least one is X-Force. I think that might be the November one, because...
That'd be a strong November.
Right? I'm thinking, like, you go Deadpool 2, you lead into X-Force. I think that's the way to do it. You build up. It's practically the Avengers of the Fox universe. That's my theory. I want to hear what you guys think. Either way, that's a bold move by Fox, especially right before Comic-Con. Ooh, someone in the live chat said Gambit. Jonathan Peck, maybe Gambit. I would like that. I will buy a ticket. Just me. I'm going to see Gambit. Staying on the Fox train, we lost Rosario Dawson in New Mutants.
Well, she was just kind of in talks with it.
I thought she was cast. I thought she was locked.
No, I'm pretty sure it was, you know, like a talk thing, like, oh, rumored to be.
Gotcha.
But then maybe it is that I saw it at that point, and then I was kind of like, in my head, I was thinking Gina Torres, so I was like, I'm okay if this doesn't happen. Yeah, it's like, it's okay. You know, I kind of want her as a Hellcat anyway.
And I like Rosario Dawson where she is on Netflix. Like, she's amazing where she is on Netflix, so I don't think we need... But
and she's already a movie actress and all her other stuff. She's kind of got it locked down with us for Netflix Marvel. So I don't think she needs, you know...
To be the part of the Fox universe
exactly.
as well. Yeah. And so Alice Braga has been cast in her stead. A great actress. She, I think, will be... I mean, that character, like, Dr. Reyes is great.
Yeah.
So no matter what, as long as they get the right actress, it's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, it's a really strong character. I mean, picture a person that wants to just be a doctor, discovers that they have mutant powers and has to deal with that.
Yeah.
But it's like to their detriment. They don't want this. They don't want any part of
it. It's a fun character.
Yeah.
If they play it right, it's going to be really important. And I really hope that the X-Men movies start paying attention to, like, the direction they're going instead of what Dark Phoenix looks like. Speaking of Dark Phoenix, Evan Peters is confirmed to be in Dark Phoenix. This movie is somehow reuniting McAvoy, Fassbender, Peters. Like, it has all of the old wave and new wave of this Fox mutant world, except for the original Bryan Singer X-Men. They have not been confirmed. They're not been mentioned. Famke Janssen has come out and said she'd love to play it, but I don't think anybody's reached out. But both waves, basically X-Men First Class on, are in this movie. It's big. It's crazy. But it's directed by Simon Kinberg, the guy that wrote with the X-Men Forever. I'm so concerned about Dark Phoenix.
I have hope. Mm-hmm. I have hope that they're going to have the right direction with it. I feel like they realize that the Dark Phoenix saga is not something to throw in as a B-plot with an underdeveloped character like they have been doing.
Right.
I feel like they realize that this is something that there is a huge market for, that we are hungering for it, that it can go as epically big or as devastatingly close to the chest small as they want it to go. So I believe that they understand.
Well, it's going to space, which is good. Yeah. And that's telling that they're reading the comics.
So
we know the Shi'ar are involved. We know we have an insane budget because the last ones keep going up.
Planet destroyed.
Yeah. So I think if they just stick with
the moon, will be involved.
Yeah. Space, moon, craziness, expensive. Yes. I just hope that they actually focus on the comics, focus on the core, focus on the characters. We'll see. We're going on to the MCU. We have our very first picture of the Wasp, thanks to advertising at D23. Basically, the last movie teased the Wasp throughout the post-credit scene. Like, the Wasp was almost in Ant-Man so many times, and, I mean, it's going to be great. The Wasp is as important, if not more important, to Marvel as Ant-Man, and I think it's going to be really exciting to see them together. I'm glad it's Ant-Man and the Wasp as a title. I'm glad that, to me, sounds like they'll have equal footing. I want the Wasp. I want the involvement.
Let's, you know, completely taking it out of the context of that she's an Avenger,
the Wasp, a founding Avenger.
A founding Avenger, and she just kind of was, you know,
there. Well, the problem I had with Ant-Man, and I've mentioned on the show before, is that she was always like, I'm better at this, I need to be doing this, this is my thing, and then they'd be like, but no. And then Paul Rudd would do it, and I was like, we never had that third act moment where she was the one.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was coming, because they set it up so much that she'd be, like, the one to save the day, and then she didn't, and I was like, so I'm hoping this movie is literally, like, it's her time to show what she can do.
Cool. I would be on board with that. I was not able to finish all of Ant-Man. Sorry, Ant-Manthony and anybody else
out there. Well, the third act doesn't have that moment you were looking for.
Okay. She's just like, she's sitting back and like, you know what? Pulls out a
helmet. That's what it could have been. You don't cast Evangeline Lilly to like sit around. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one sounds great. I'm excited for Ant-Man and Wasp. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the movie, Randall Park, who is everywhere nowadays, this guy's in every comedy coming out. He's in Ant-Man, which is very telling of the tone it'll be. Like the last one, it was very much a comedy. It was arguably Marvel's like most comedic comedy. Like, it was a Paul Rudd movie. Like, Ant-Man felt like that genre, and adding Randall Park to the sequel makes us think that'll very much be another comedy. This guy's great. He was Kim Jong-un in The Interview. And then everyone wanted him in everything because he's brilliant. So I'm excited. So that's exciting for where we're going with that universe. More comedy with Ant-Man.
Sweet.
We've got our first look at Surtur with Funko dolls. Not Lego this time, guys. For once, Lego didn't ruin everything.
And look at what they did.
How cool are these?
So cool. We've got the skeleton going on. There's the burning fire on the skull, and it's got all the flair that you want with Surtur.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he looks fantastic next to Heimdall and Valkyrie.
I just wanted Idris Elba Funko, man. Like, that thing is badass.
Yeah, the Heimdall Funko has got the eyes down pat.
It's so intense. Like, that thing is looking into your soul now.
Yes.
I believe he can see across the universe. That Funko doll,
I absolutely do.
I think that I don't
have to turn that one to the wall.
I can't sleep.
It's like, don't look at my dreams.
The gunslinger staring into my soul. So these Funkos look great. I think Teresa Thompson's looks amazing as well.
Yes.
These are some of my favorite Funkos. I'm a big fan of Funkos.
Really good. I love what they're doing with the hair with these, with Valkyrie and Heimdall. It's just... with Funko Pops, well, the ones that I have, it just seems to be pretty standard with the hair, and like with here, they had fun with it. Yeah, they branched out, and it looks good. they did a good job with this.
Yeah, these are my favorite set, I think, and I'm probably going to have to get them all. In staying with the MCU, we're going to move on to Captain Marvel. There's been a couple rumors in the last 2 weeks since we've been here that apparently Samuel L. Jackson is the phrasing we've heard co-starring in Captain Marvel. Now, I don't think that phrasing is necessarily accurate. I don't think it's going to be like Captain Marvel team up Nick Fury, because the scope of Captain Marvel doesn't make sense that she'd have a human tagging along. Like, I don't think it's going to be him with a bubble in space. Like, that's not a realistic expectation. But it does mean that after basically Winter Soldier and Civil War set up the reclusion of his character, what does that mean for Nick Fury? Where's he been? What's he been doing?
Yeah.
I love that in the comics right now, anytime they need someone's help, they refer to, like, Nick Fury's past. They're like, he had this safe house. He had these LMDs. He had all this.
We have to do this.
We have this Nick Fury caveat.
We have this blueprint that we can follow that
from
he
Nick
is
Fury.
Mean.
Yeah,
from
exactly.
Nick Fury. The Nick Fury blueprint.
So him being gone in these movies, I think, is setting up, like, Nick Fury setting up his share of the universe. So him and Captain Marvel, to me, is very telling of, like, he's out of hiding. They needed him. So I think the scope of that.
Or maybe him and Captain Marvel have a history of something where he was in a position where trained her in some way, you know,
flashbacks
maybe some
enough.
Sort of, yeah, flashback, prodigy kind of an option, where they're training together or he runs across her in some other kind of military
she's
way.
She's a captain, it makes sense.
Exactly.
They need that association of S.H.I.E.L.D. to her.
Yeah, maybe she's involved in some sort of mission and then has to butt against S.H.I.E.L.D. and she's like, what's this? This is weird. And he's like, don't worry about it. But actually, you know what? You're smart. I'll see you later.
Well, yeah, and maybe he's not on S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, so he's going to be...
So,
they're both on the run, potentially. I'm excited because I like him as Nick Fury, so I'm excited to have him back. We have also these two. I am so intrigued. Do you know these two actors?
I'm not familiar with their work.
Okay, so we have two actors that have just been cast in Black Panther, and I don't know either of them. Oh, no, sorry, Luke Cage. They've just been cast.
Luke
Cage. I was going to say, Luke, that is coming out soon. A gentleman named Mustafa Shakir, who is in The Night Of. He'll be playing Bushmaster. And then Gabrielle, I don't know what she's from, but she's gorgeous. And Luke Cage is soon, like they're casting it all right now to ramp
Gabrielle
up.
Gabrielle Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And she's cast as Nightshade.
Now, these characters, I don't know them very well.
Yeah. Okay.
I know
so,
Bushmaster a little from Avengers, but what are they like?
Yeah. So Bushmaster still... depends. Okay, so they say John McIver. Okay, so with Bushmaster, it seems like it would be the original Bushmaster, where not a cool dude, not a good dude.
Not the nicest guy.
Not a nice guy. Brilliant, not a nice guy. He's the one that's lusting after Luke Cage's power. He's the one that ends up kidnapping, you know, the doctor and everything to then, like, get the power infused with him and trying to set a trap for Luke Cage and ends up, let's just say, over baking himself in the same chemical element that Luke Cage got his powers from. And because of that, he's steadily turning into kind of a hardened metal. Mm-hmm. But that's over a progress of time. But this man is, this would be a pretty interesting nemesis for him. As far as Nightshade is concerned, and I know that people tweeted me about that. And because Nightshade, we have, it's Tilda Johnson. So with her, we have her established in Black Panther because remember we have an actress that just said, oh, I've been holding this close to the vest all this time. Mm-hmm. It's good to let the secret out, where she's also Tilda Johnson. I would think for MCU, they could go full Queen of the Werewolves. Tilda Johnson, she, a.k.a. Nightshade, she kind of started off as one of those monster of the issues, for lack of a better term, and it was actually with Captain America, and she did this little schism thing between Captain America and Falcon. I keep on wanting to say actors' names as opposed to the actual characters.
That means they did it.
Yeah, where she turned Falcon into a werewolf, and then Well, no, this is like the very first one that you saw her with.
Okay.
Yeah, where it was like.
So she's a newer character. I'd assume she'd been around.
But like, no, when I say like first, I mean like this is old school. Like
the
Captain
first time
America.
He was a werewolf.
Well, the first
Falcon
time
was just Falcon. A werewolf again.
Of course he was. Okay, once you go werewolf, happened. I'm just saying.
He's as Captain America, he was just a werewolf again like 2 years ago.
Excellent.
So it keeps happening, you guys.
Okay. But with her, she's like deals with pheromones. She's extremely smart. She's self-taught. Like she has the equivalent of, you know, doctorates and everything like that. But she's from the streets, you know, wrong side of the tracks, had to teach herself. Even tried, she has like this... this phase where she tries to, you know, like, hey, I'm not going to be a bad guy anymore. This is not going to happen. But what are you going to do when you don't actually have a degree from, say, an Ivy League college?
Right, right.
You just have the equivalent
How
of
do you
it.
Prove your knowledge?
How yeah. do you prove your knowledge? So then she falls back into hard times again. But this is a fun character, and I don't mind it being two different actresses for this character because it can be so different. For me, TV and movies is so different.
Yeah.
So to have her in Luke Cage... I don't want her Queen of the Werewolves there. I want her, she can deal with pheromones. She can deal with, you know, potions mm-hmm. and
but
different chemical elements.
We
don't need somebody popping fur, mm-hmm. you know, and
that
stuff.
That show's too grounded for werewolves.
For that. It was a little bit too grounded for what they were trying to do with Diamondbacks.
Yeah,
so,
I agree. Yeah, they didn't need that
so
suit.
So they don't need werewolves. While MCU, oh, werewolf all day. Show me a werewolf. I'm good with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But that's fun times to have both of those in for Luke Cage season 2.
So they've been cast. We now have an idea of the shape of the villains. We see where the show might be going. Obviously, really early, but casting is underway. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Defenders universe, they announced their TV lineup at SDCC. And the Defenders are going, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going, and we'll get to see some more Inhumans stuff. Now, a lot of you guys asked what we thought of the Inhumans trailer. Perhaps blissfully, it broke while we were away. it was a trailer that featured characters vaguely resembling the Inhumans, and it was early, so I'm gonna keep hoping. I'm gonna keep hoping until it comes out. I think I'm gonna hold all judgment. It was about as bland as her wig, is what I'll say about it. That Inhumans yeah. trailer wasn't for me.
It because you know there was that leaked trailer, and I didn't really see much of a difference from the leaked than from the official one. I know that we didn't talk about the leaked trailer because it's like, well, not that much went into in depth with it. So, I mean, I guess I can understand what they're trying to do with it. I just don't believe in humanizing the Inhumans.
They're Kirby characters.
I really don't. I believe in embracing the crazy when mm-hmm. it comes to that. I mean, I do like the nods that they do to the Kirby-esque characters, for instance, with, you know, Lockjaw, where he has a little wishbone.
Yeah.
A little wishbone print on,
yeah,
you know, his face.
Yeah, there's some cuteness. Lockjaw yeah. looks great. I mean, that's the one thing I've heard from a lot of people,
yeah,
is that
yeah.
Lockjaw's got the redeeming factor of the trailer.
Yeah, he looks personable, mm-hmm. and, you know, it looks like he's going to have something to say when he's in it. I didn't necessarily agree with, for instance, it seemed like a plot device for the Hawaiian police to be beating on Black Bolt, who was in a
successfully.
Suit. Who was in a suit, successfully beating on him, Black Bolt, with,
yeah.
you know, with their, what are those called? Billy clubs? They're mm-hmm. not Billy clubs.
But yeah, effectively Billy clubs, like those.
Yeah,
things.
To enough to make him grunt to
exhale and then like release his power. Like.
For one of their cars. That was
also why was it one car? We literally, I think Matt mentioned months ago.
It
he's
would
like,
have
what
to
if
be
that,
a building.
Yeah, he's like, what if the powers are just this? And he described that scene, and then the trailer had it. Like as a like, I just we got other good stuff to talk about, so we don't want to dwell on this too long. But we'll wait till it comes out, and it doesn't. Yeah. I mean, the lighting itself looked like CW in like 1998.
Yeah.
Like it just didn't work for me.
It did look sci-fi back when they did SCIFI mm-hmm. and like they were 90s and then like an original sci-fi show. It kind of looked like that for me. I do believe that Karnak was on point.
Yeah. Yeah,
he
looked awesome.
They had some great action going on with him. I very much believe with that. I didn't like how silent it felt that Medusa was.
Yeah,
I mean, this
she
is
can
the
talk.
This is the voice, right?
Yeah, she's the mouthpiece
this is
to
the
mouthpiece. The royals.
Yes. Exactly. And it just seemed she seemed super secondary if not mm-hmm. tertiary.
Right.
And albeit it was a trailer, but it just That was a little bit off to me. I mean, make her, if you're going to go Game of Thrones with it, and it kind of felt like
go
they were going,
Game
then she's, then make her Cersei then right. make her vocal, make her powerful. You know, even in her weakness, Cersei is powerful. And I didn't really get that with what they were going with this particular character. I will say that Maximus feels on point also.
It Maximus does, and the voice yeah. is great. It's just, it felt like a lot of half measures to me. It felt like a lot of, like, almost there. So yeah. we'll see in September. Maybe it's just a rough trailer. We're going to stay with TV. Mm-hmm. This is exciting because we actually said this on our show in our lofty hopes. Do you remember those pictures of Lucy Liu on set? And we were like, wouldn't it be great if she was directing?
I said that. Yeah. I was like, she's directing. She's directing.
How cool is that?
Like, it's fantastic.
Because that was out of nowhere, just hope. And yeah. like, it's real.
I mean, this freaking rock star. I mean, Lucy Liu, talk about bringing it mm-hmm. for like an entire career. I mean, you can go all the way back to Ally McBeal. Yeah. You can go right now to Elementary, and then in between, like, she's a rock star, and then to have her directing the premiere,
yeah, for the premiere season 2, episode,
the premiere That's episode, cool. It's like, how can this get more awesome?
Yeah.
I don't know, but keep on sprinkling some awesome on it. Smack it.
We've only got one director that we know, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I love that, like, last season we knew it was, like, Wu-Tang. Like, where we yeah. had RZA directing, and now Lucy Liu. Like, there's, like, a great, like, celebrity director yeah. a season.
It's like, we had Method Man. It's like, now we got this!
Yeah! So I'm excited for Luke Cage. I'm really excited for that first episode. I'm really curious what her directing style is. She's been in the industry forever. I wonder how she directs. I want to see that. So I'm really mm-hmm. excited. So she's handling that first episode. And then we also briefly heard about Punisher. It's a longish quote, but basically we are shaping the Punisher show to be something different. He doesn't have superpowers. He doesn't have these drives that most superheroes do. So they're describing the show as very different. We've met the Punisher in the realm of Daredevil, but we haven't had his own show yet. So I'm really curious with these quotes the directors are saying what the show looks like, because mm-hmm. I thought he stole like season 2. So to have his own show and to have it be that dark and like everything else, I'm real stoked.
Yeah, no, I remember Punisher was one of my guys back when I was a kid. You know, mm-hmm. I got the original Nintendo game for yeah. that, which is ridiculous. Don't get it because it's ridiculously hard. You can't even beat Jigsaw. It's like, don't even start. But yeah, because it's one of those anti-hero things where you kind of understand where they're coming from mm-hmm. and you're like,
you feel bad that you get it. Yeah.
Yeah. But not that bad.
Right.
Also, it's like, if I had the skills and the money and the guns, I'd do what you do.
Yeah. And yeah. so that's a great character when you feel that way.
Yeah.
And a full show. So it is time. We got through.
Did you enjoy the news? Because now it's time for the real news.
That was a struggle, you guys. Just like even reading or acknowledging or looking at the internet for the last hour was just, it was just not happening. Spider-Man Homecoming came
yes.
out.
When we get into spoilers.
Should we open, do you guys want like 5-10 minutes of no spoilers?
Yeah, let's do no spoilers.
And then we'll both wave. And yes. then we'll go into spoilers.
Okay, so you know, we'll do 5-10 minutes, no spoilers.
So welcome, stay with us.
Yeah, when we get to that point.
You can go watch the movie and come back. If you haven't seen it, this is fine for now.
Okay.
It was everything they promised and more. The trailers did not give too much away. It was yeah. like, I mean, in my opinion, like the childhood Spider-Man that I didn't think they'd fully embrace. Like it was an 80s... There was literally a Bueller. There were so many moments that were exactly the character. It was. Do you remember when Wizard Magazine was out and they used to daydream casts? And I remember once, like, people were talking about Michael J. Fox as Spider-Man. This was. We got that. Like, this was Back to the Future.
Yes. Yes. Yes, actually.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, we got that classic.
I totally understand what you're talking about with her. And yes, it is that sweet spot.
That perfect saccharine sweet. It felt like eating ice cream on a hot summer day, the movie. Like, it just felt right. Like,
so it was
felt
cane sugar. It was cane sugar.
It yeah,
so
it was good. Like Mexican Coke, like the Mexico, where it's like real sugar and it tastes great. That yeah. was this movie. We've had lots of Coke, but not like the right flavor. Like this movie, yeah. when I got out of it, the first thing I thought of was we've had so many movies where writers, directors, and actors have clearly read the comics. They clearly care. They clearly invested.
Yes.
But it felt like someone's interpretation into a movie. You know, it felt like they movie-ized a different medium. To me, this felt like what it would look like if actors were in a comic book. This felt like flipping through the pages of a comic meets the 90s animated series, shaken and stirred with Tom Holland, and boom, Spider-Man. Like, it was right. And there were so many, once we get into spoilers, I'm going to have to, like, talk about the stuff.
Yeah,
but the tone specifics. Is safe. Like,
yes,
the tone is safe.
The tone and our reactions to it are
what
fine.
What was your first, when you walked out, what was your first moment of, like,
The very first moment was when the tonality-wise,
like when you first walked out, like
tonality-wise, I felt, and I even tweeted it. I was like, it was so awkward and joyful and honest, mm-hmm. and that was the thing that like really hit it for me, because it was Spider-Man, and it was Spider-Man as a 15-year-old,
and he felt
as
15.
We want, yeah, and it was bumbling, mm-hmm. but it was bumbling and it was bumbling in a way like teenagers do, mm-hmm. where it's just like, this is my world, but he's trying to think of beyond his world, and he's trying to think of beyond his world so much, but he's also thinking adults are kind of stupid.
Yeah.
And there's that thing that's running in through it, and then they kind of are a little bit, but not in the ways that he thought that they were.
Which is like a good coming of age movie, when you have that like moment of like, oh, I was a kid.
Yeah, it was just, and I was dumb kidding it right
but
then.
On the stakes of like Washington D.C. like but on yes, the on scale this, of like a superhero movie,
yeah, on this huge scale, and then to be able to realize that, you know, be this character that realizes that and then also has to deal with all the other stuff that you have to as a teenager, which I feel is something that was spectacularly done with this movie. Mm-hmm. He was not too cool.
Yes.
He was not too nerdy.
Right.
It was just right. He had his select group of friends, was still trying to, you know, be more, right. like all of us did in high school. And yet the things that were in high school, they didn't matter to him
right.
when it was like, oh, or this. And then it's like, oh, well, yeah, there's this, but then there's all this around me. So I love that dichotomy. I love that it did. And we don't get that enough. We don't get that with superheroes.
I feel like Tobey Maguire was a great Spider-Man, and I feel like Andrew Garfield had moments of being a great Spider-Man, mm-hmm. but neither was given the right arena to play with their characters. Sam Raimi certainly gave Tobey a lot more, and he got much closer. That's why Spider-Man 2 is amazing. Mm-hmm. But Amazing Spider-Man, the writers just didn't like play with Spider-Man right, and Andrew Garfield, as much as he loved the character, never got to fully embody it. Tom Holland was born to be this Spider-Man. Like he's been training in ballet in acrobatics and like his whole life, and then is incredible acting. He's been killing it in acting since he was old. And if he was Billy Elliot on stage, like this guy has been like honing this perfect Peter Parker, and you feel that in every frame. Like you feel his youth, you feel his excitement, you feel his exuberance for the character, you feel his geeky earnestness. Like you feel all these things, and it feels real. It doesn't feel like someone trying to be cool or someone trying to be dorky. It doesn't feel like a writer doing this. And the thing I liked most was all the quips. Usually the Spider-Man movies, like, one of three lands. Like, you get, like, a joke or two that works. He was funny. This movie was hilarious. No, the supporting cast was also, like, the best supporting cast I've seen in a superhero movie in a long time.
Yes. I mean, not only the cast, like, the supporting cast, but also just the environment, the extras and everything that they had around them.
The tiger joke?
It was
so funny.
Wait, what?
Did you not get... There's a mascot that runs through the background of the movie like three times for no reason. Never explained. There's just a tiger running around. Hilarious to me.
It's like, hey, tiger.
That's my kind of joke. When there's just a tiger mascot sprinting, would never explained.
Man, I'd tell you then have to watch that movie.
Rewatchability,
one more time.
Real high.
Have to rewatch it. And then Zendaya was just like, it was such a great supporting cast. But what I'm saying for like the world around it, that felt like real high school to me. You know,
it
whenever
like
you
it
see
too.
Exactly. It's like people were actually interacting in a way that was legitimate. It felt legitimate.
And no classmates were shaving between scenes. I hate when I watch like a CW show where it's like this 30-year-old's like, yep, just going to science class. Like these were kids and they were playing kids. And we should go spoilers, do you think? Because we keep almost saying, I see you like hesitate and like I feel like we don't have the full.
Yeah, keep on.
All right, we're going to go spoilers.
Okay. Spoilers!
Spoilers are happening. It's back.
Spoiler alert.
Thank you. Scene, so the decathlon.
Okay.
Cindy. I think that's Cindy Moon, like, reference. Like,
wait, really?
Yeah, the girl, the Asian girl at the decathlon's name is Cindy.
Oh, my God! I didn't hear her! Because I saw it when I was sick, so I was very happy to be there.
Right. Totally get that. Donald Glover, his character?
Oh, yes, where he says, oh, yeah, I've got a nephew that lives
around
here.
I don't want those guns in the street. It's got a nephew. I'm like, what? And did you see the license plate?
Because your nephew is Miles.
What? The license plate in his car?
No, what was his license plate?
Was UCS01, Ultimate Comic Spider-Man number 1, where they introduce Miles Morales.
God.
He's literally webbed to the introduction of the character that he invented.
Beautiful.
So in real life, Donald Glover is talking to Spider-Man about a character that was invented because of Donald Glover's love of Spider-Man while webbed to a car with the issue that he influenced, like, meta.
Holy crap.
That moment to me was worth everything.
That moment deserves...
full shades for Alan and that
full
movie.
Full shades.
It was a lot.
Full shades.
That moment was that hot and bright.
That moment was so bright.
And the number of villains? The Prowler. Like, yeah. He's the Prowler. Oh, they mentioned that he's the Prowler.
Yes.
I did not believe they like...
I loved that they killed... was it Tom Hardy, too? No, Logan Marshall Green.
Diet Venom.
Diet Venom. I love that they killed him. Accidentally. I love that it was an accident. Be like, oh, wait, that's not the anti-graviton grunge?
So funny.
No, that's that one. Oh.
And how little... I think that the Vulture was the second best MCU villain.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know what? The Vulture was so good, it made me feel bad because I might have been on his side.
Right. He's right? The little guy. He's the guy that's like, Tony Stark did do exactly that.
Yeah. And at least he could have done is like, I don't know, God knows he has the money. He could have mm-hmm. done some sort of, I don't know, subsidy or something to, hey, we're really apologies. We're going to recoup all your losses. Right. And then there's this on top of it.
And the opening with them made you feel for them. Those criminals didn't feel like stupid movie criminals. You're like, oh, these are guys down on their luck.
It's like, this was my dad.
This happened.
This was my dad trying to do the best possible thing for me, mm-hmm. kind of a deal. You're
and like, that moment when he opened the door, like I was so in the movie. I'm usually so good at predicting or like not even wanting to, but then being like not surprised. When he opened the door, I was like,
it's like total twist. I was like, wait, this what?
And that's what Spider-Man is. Spider-Man is him fighting against like his own pride, his own family, his friends, parents. Like they made the Osborn type thing work without an Osborn because we've had the Green Goblin 87 times. They did that, and even the fight with the glider, which became the Vulture's wings.
It looked like a nightmare. That it looked was like a nightmare the comics. Made live.
How many times have we seen the Goblin glider trying to like stab Spider-Man and said they met at the Vulture? Like, what a great way to use beautiful comic imagery. And guys, my favorite comic of all time, my favorite cover of all time is Amazing Spider-Man number 33. This is mine, and this is my favorite cover. This was in the movie. How amazing, like, to see your favorite cover come to life so well, and that to be, like, the moment he's born. Yeah.
You remember this moment where he's like, come on, Spider-Man. Come on, Spider-Man.
And that's when you realize he's a kid again. Like, that moment when you're like, he's a child under rubble.
He's 15.
And like
he's 15 years old.
The side to side, like the mask reflection, mm-hmm. which is in every Ditko comic ever written. Like Ditko loves that reflection shot.
Yeah.
It was so good. Like,
it was so incredibly good.
And the Scorpion, I'm so glad I didn't know that he was in it, because that moment when they mentioned Matt Gargan for the first time, I lost my mind. I stood up in this movie at least 7 times. The poor people behind me had to deal with me being like, what? What? So much. It was the anti-Age of Ultron, because I knew nothing. I thought the trailers gave too much away, and they didn't.
No. In fact, if anything, you could tell that they messed with the ADR with the scene where Tony Stark is walking with him.
Which I appreciate.
You know, which totally appreciate, you know, in the new Avengers headquarters. And it was like, well, he was like, oh, don't worry about that Vulture guy. No, he was saying, hey, good job, dude. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Avengers.
And the only thing I would have changed about the trailers was we found out that Tony saved the fairy. So the stakes of the fairy scene were a lot lower, because it was like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, wait, no, we saw the trailer. That's the only scene.
I agree. That could have been a thing to like minus that, and this like, wait, how did that?
Right.
What happened with that? I mean, he's you know.
But that's one moment now, in 2 hours.
That's exactly true. Okay, one thing real quick with like the preview. Sorry, Black Panther in trailer in like huge theater. Oh my god, I was the idiot in
theater. I get it.
That was just.
It was great to experience like full.
Yeah, but I think I got the people in my row like totally hyped.
That's what was fun, is like all the trailers.
I was an idiot.
You can gauge your movie audience during the trailers. And when everybody started cheering during Black Panther, I was like, okay, I picked the right one. Like, you want that theater to be lively. And when this movie opened so big with the Peter Parker, like a film by Peter Parker.
The film by Peter Parker!
What a brilliant way to open a movie.
That was great!
It's literally the movie makers going, we know we failed you. This is a movie by Peter Parker. Welcome to Spider-Man.
Oh man, when he was like, wait, my room, that's my room too.
Yeah, like the whole movie had so many moments ripped from the comics that I don't know if I've this is such a bold statement. I'm not saying this is my favorite comic movie, because I'd have to see it like 82 more times.
Right.
But I think this is the most visual cues and references that I've ever experienced as a film goer from comics. Like, I've never had so many panels pop in my head. I've never had so many lines of dialogue. I've never had so many waves of nostalgia for reading comics. This felt like a comic book movie. Like, it had the Punisher, I mean, not the Punisher, the Prowler, the Shocker, the Vulture, the Tinkerer, and it never felt bloated. Like, this movie had, like, Batman and Robin number of villains, but it didn't feel forced. That's incredible writing.
Yeah.
And no, it all felt real.
You didn't feel like it was like an, oh, let me schlock this into there kind of a thing. And then when it could have kind of felt a bit too many people, they just killed one of them.
Right.
They, so, who
played? They played, they killed Montana, like, just as he, like, he's a silly, like, enforcer, and they just threw, like that character would be.
Yeah.
And the
it's dead now. He's
the
gone.
Comedy, man, with Flash was so funny. Flash was great. I loved how they handled Flash.
Yes! Because, yes, that I like that they took the essence of the characters and they made it into, and that's what we need it to be, the essence of the characters. Because Flash is a character that is like, he's a bully.
Yeah.
He's a bully and he's well-to-do because part of one of his things is, you know, the fall from grace, which brings a lot to his character.
Right. He needs that. So they need to start him like this.
Yeah. You have Spider-Man stealing his car.
His dad's car.
Commandeering. I'm sorry. Like, commandeering the
and
car.
Destroying
and
destroying it.
Trashing it. I was like, oh my God.
And there were so many moments.
That did not happen.
Penis Parker was such a funny line. That is exactly how high school kids handle humor.
That is,
it felt
yes.
like a high school joke.
Yes.
And it was so funny.
Yeah.
Like, and the way all the characters interacted, like, you actually cared about him and Liz Allen. Like, you cared about, you felt his crush. It wasn't an adult relationship. Like, the problem I have with a lot of comic movies is everything is already adult, so you know what that emotion feels like. I forgot what it felt like when you were 15 to have a crush. How, like, just, like, I don't want this feeling.
Yeah.
You felt that, like, no.
This is all-encompassing.
Yeah,
it's everything.
And you felt that for him.
Yeah.
When he's on the roof looking through and he's, like, putting on the spider suit, like, I gotta go save the world. They're like, what?
And it's like, she's sitting right there. And then later on, where it's like, she invited him to the pool. And it's a pool. And it's, you know, they're 15-year-olds. You know,
all them hormones
ready.
He had to go to Washington.
And it's like, yeah, no, he has to go to Washington.
The scene where he's trapped training, which felt like the best video game I've never played. The scene where he's, like, learning all the web shooter combos and stuff. Like,
oh, God, Karen. Let's talk about Karen.
What a great Easter
Jennifer
egg.
Connelly. Oh,
the
my
wife of Jarvis.
God.
Jarvis's wife played the lady in the suit, which is so good.
Yes.
Like, this probably has as... Is this the most Easter eggs? Because it feels like the most Easter eggs. There are so many Easter eggs
so
in this movie.
Fun. It's so much fun. And then, like, oh, some people in the chat room. JSOP4. Return stolen bike. Please take if this is your bike.
Yes!
The Spider-Man notes.
Spider-Man notes are so important. Because that's, like, one of the weirdest things he does. He's like, I'll leave a note. Like, what a weird thing to do as a superhero. And he did it so many times in that movie.
Did it. It's like, what else is he going to really do?
Oh, it's so good.
You know, he doesn't have that the contacts with the media or anything like that. To
he's
be
a
like,
kid.
He's 15.
And I
and
love...
he's just trying to, you know, make it happen.
They didn't, like, the comics right now, the biggest problem I have with Amazing Spider-Man, the flagship title in the comics is they've made him a lot like Tony Stark and that he's a world traveler and he's a billionaire and all those things that I don't like in my Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I was so afraid of that with this movie, but it did a thing where it appealed to both. The Iron Spider suit is in it for the people that love that and the people that don't.
It looked so
it was great.
Good.
But I'm so glad he didn't wear it. Like,
yeah.
I'm so glad that we didn't get an Iron Spider movie because it's not time yet.
Yeah, no, not time. And then I went, oh, God, what's his name? Cho? What's the name of
Ned?
Iron Spider?
Oh, Iron Spider.
We'll remember. Our chat room will let us know. But one of the things that I really liked about this also is that the crime level was appropriate
for the
movie.
Kid. Yeah,
it was. Where it's like, yeah, he's running around
when he shoots a web straight out of. There's a comic where there's a kid in a big wheel and he shoots his web and there's nothing for it to grab onto. They got that frame exactly right in the movie, and he just. They're literally comic frames come to life. That moment was so Spider-Man. He's a friendly neighborhood guy.
He's running across the putting green like, oh,
this
sucks.
Perfect Spider-Man.
Man.
And, like, the Washington, D.C. stuff was beautiful. The level of explosion felt real. Like, everything felt grounded and real. And you felt like he was... And, like, the comedy of that teacher, that actor I love, I forget his name off the top of my head, but, like, we can't lose another student on a field trip.
Not again.
Like, those jokes were so Spider-Man. Like, it was so funny.
Yeah. And it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel hackneyed or anything like that. It was perfect. It was really in there. And mm-hmm. then there's so much more. I mean, okay. Something I wasn't completely on board with was with how much they were trying to shoehorn Aunt May into those like spectacles and stuff. They yeah. were just really trying to, you know,
age her up a little.
They were really trying to do that. I'm like, just let it happen. You cast her. You Aunt know Bay. Who you cast.
Keep Aunt May.
You just keep Aunt May.
We
it's
know
fine.
She is. Marissa May Tomei is too attractive to try to pretend like she's going to be that Aunt May. She's ultimate Aunt May.
Yeah, and it's absolutely okay to have older women that are super attractive and that are just because someone's older doesn't mean they aren't attractive.
Marissa Tomei for life.
Just let it happen, Angela Bassett. Just let it happen, Helen yeah. Mirren. Just let it happen. It's like there's not that I'm trying to say that spectacles or whatever, but it's just like it felt gaggy mm-hmm. to me, and I just didn't want them to do that.
Did you have a problem with speaking about May, the lack of spider sense?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess the most spider sense that we got was when he was taking out the ATM robbers. Mm-hmm,
he was dodging?
Yeah.
I was thinking about it because there was so much controversy before the movie about the spider sense thing. In my opinion, they can easily have him have spider sense in the next one. He wasn't in danger with Aunt May, and he wasn't in danger with Ned. He mm-hmm. trusts these people. They're not going to hurt him. If anything, that shows that his spider sense is for danger. The reason they said they didn't do it is because the other two franchises used it so much for cinematic, like, they didn't want to have that familiar visual.
Right.
I think that, like, he can just be honing his powers and get spider sense. It didn't bother me, and I'm a pretty diehard Spider-Man fan. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Did that affect you?
No. I was okay with that because, I needed him to get hit, mm-hmm. you know, I actually was one of my, my points with it. I felt like for somebody recovering from a concussion from, you know, where he basically knocked himself out,
yeah,
you know, for him to then be in a battle with the Vulture later and to be able to get back up after
right,
crashing
adversity.
A
yeah.
plane, I thought that they could have made that a little bit more woozy, realistic, you know. Mm-hmm. I know he's a superhero, but still,
yeah,
he knocked himself out before.
And that scene, the final battle with him on the airplane, which is straight out of Amazing Spider-Man number one, where he saves the frickin' space capsule. The scenes always felt like it was a kid. At no point, like, you know, in superhero movies when they have a younger part and then they put like an adult in the stunt suit.
Yeah,
like,
no, he felt like
a kid throughout.
And he's like 20 something plus.
He just
right?
turned 21.
Just turned 21. Yeah, no, he felt like a 15.
He felt like a kid.
It felt good. It was good.
And, like, Ned was hilarious.
Oh, my God.
I was unprepared for Spider-Man to have a best friend because it's, like...
the man in the chair.
The man in the chair. The Batman chair. Reference was so... Like, that whole, like... There were so many moments that I just didn't expect to love as much as I did. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew I'd love this movie, but it, like... It's probably the most rewatchable superhero movie in a long time because of the tone, the humor, the style, the Easter eggs. There's so much in this thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's license plate jokes. When was the last time we got to, like, make that exciting?
And I will just say with Zendaya, I know you caught it. It mm-hmm. was like really close to the end after she's made, you know, captain of the new decathlon. And it's like, yay, Michelle. And she goes, yeah, well, you know, my friends call me MJ.
Which we'll see.
And they're
Kevin
like,
Feige,
what? They're
Kevin
like,
Feige
what?
Said
they're
she's
like,
not
what
Mary
friends?
Jane.
Well, you know what?
He said she's
she
Michelle.
Makes a perfect Mary
I mean, we've been talking about this for, what, 2 years? Like,
yeah.
Since she was cast, we've been saying Mary Jane.
She's perfect. Just like,
so either
all
way
of her
they go.
Zingers.
Oh
all
my
of
God,
her zingers,
so
like, the entire movie. It's like, where are you going, Peter? I mean, you're running off. I forget it. I don't care. Just go.
That character was such a fun, like, dark humor, or, like, dry humor compared to everyone else's big. Mm-hmm. Like, that straight man to the comedy was so funny and so perfect.
Yeah.
Like, that, I wouldn't change nothing. Like, there, mm-hmm. I have no real, like, foibles with the movie. Like, I rarely don't have a problem with anything.
Yeah, like, Ollie says in the chat room, when she flipped Peter off at the dance.
Yes.
After, you know, that moment, after he's, like, he realizes who Tombs is, and it's like, oh, my God, I just want to enjoy the dance with the girl, I, you mm-hmm. know, she's my crush, and she's going to, and then standing there, and then, yeah, all of his friends are looking like, hey, what are you doing, Peter?
That car scene leading up to the dance between, like, the Vulture, Liz Allen, and Spider-Man was the best comic I've never read.
It knocked me out.
It felt like a scene you'd read, and the tension was there, and everything, and then it's just, it was so Spider-Man.
And you know what I loved about it is that it felt completely right. It mm-hmm. felt legit because, yes, an adult would figure this out.
Your voice sounds familiar. Like, that's the biggest, every superhero has that problem. And they called it out movie one. Like, movie one! And the post-credit scenes. We gotta talk about those. The post-credit scene where basically the Scorpion's like, hey, Vulture, I know you know who Spider-Man is. That's a sentence I got to say in real life just now. The Scorpion got to talk to the Vulture in prison about who Spider-Man is, and it didn't feel forced.
No.
How cool is that?
Yeah. And I loved his answer. Mm-hmm. Where he was like, if I knew, he'd already be
and
dead.
That smirk, like the smirk, mm-hmm. which can go either like revenge or he saved my life, so I respect him. I love that Michael Keaton, like we said, we felt for him. That goes either way. The movie ends on a note where it can be like, is the Vulture going to be a big bad later? Or does he saved his daughter in his life? Like, where does it go?
Yeah, I think it was totally, he was thinking about his family again.
Yeah.
Because think about
that's
it.
That's the character.
If they know that it's Spider-Man, that Spider-Man is Peter Parker, and that Peter Parker took her to that dance, and they're like, oh, let's go after her to get, I mean, it's a no-brainer. If you're a bad guy, you're going to go after the people that they love.
And I love the Scorpion, like, had that thing in his arm, like, and that, like, thing to help him walk, because that ties right into the exoskeleton suit. Which because I'm gonna make him the Scorpion.
Man, when it looked like he went under the boat at first, I was like, no, wait, what?
Matt Gargan,
don't kill the Scorpion. I know you killed a Shocker, but
that's the thing, is like the villains felt like thugs and disposable until they weren't, which is real life. Things are what they are until they evolve, and these characters are just evolved. That's how you make a Sinister Six. That's how you make a shared universe movie. You have these characters get more important and get bigger. This could completely start a shared universe. Like, there's so many characters introduced, this could be a thing.
Do you think that this is a universe that Venom could eventually exist in? I'm thinking like two movies from now.
Yeah. Down the road? Sure.
Yeah. Where it feels like it could get that heavy.
I think once he's out of high school. I think, you know, you do the junior year movie, the senior year movie, get some college, and then go. Like movie four? Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, the number of villains they set up, it's Spider-Man's rogues gallery is enormous. Mm-hmm. And this was really cool to see them do that right. And, like, the Aunt May, the last moment, that last line of dialogue, like, what the F, Aunt May, is...
I was like, what the...
What a great way to end a comedy superhero movie.
It was with... You would think that he would learn to stop taking off his mask and his robe.
And the parallel to Iron Man to that? The movie ended the opposite of Iron Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How cool is that? Iron Man literally goes, I'm Iron Man. This movie ends with what the F Aunt May. That's a beautiful, like, because they're setting up that, like, father-son relationship, and the movie ends with that father-son relationship. The levels of this movie are just, the team that wrote this, those six writers are just brilliant. And the cap scene at the end, guys, the post-credit scene was so funny, and getting trolled by Captain America is something I never thought I'd experience. That was great. Hannibal Buress's line about, like, yeah, he's a war criminal now, but the state says I gotta show it. Like, Hannibal Buress just, like...
Perfect. That was perfect.
I would change
perfect
nothing.
Delivery.
The principal being the grandson of the Howling Commander. Did you see that?
No. I saw that, I loved that they showed, like, that history with the principal, that he was obviously a well-decorated veteran.
So,
and I loved that. I didn't catch...
The picture behind him was of his grandfather, who served with Cap in Cap 1, because it's the same actor.
The
actor that plays the principal played a Howling Commando in Captain America 1. So he has a picture of himself from Cap 1.
Fantastic.
That's an Easter egg on an Easter egg.
That's beautiful.
That's like an incepted hatchling.
Okay, that kind of care is what we love. That's what we respond to.
How funny is that?
That's fantastic.
There's so many details
I just saw that as really great.
Like world building.
Yeah, world building. It's like, it's not just some random principal that has to make a joke or be like, okay, you're a good
Howling
kid.
Commando
it's like he's
grandpa.
A veteran. It's like...
And then, like, having the science world, like the Bruce Banner mentioned, having the Sokovia Accords mentioned in a class.
Yes.
Like, all of that attention. There was no throwaway dialogue in this movie.
No. Just reading some things in the chat room. Peter's interrogation voice killed me.
That was so funny. The Donald Glover scene, like, that scene was like a little mini movie.
Tell me what you know.
Yeah, you got to get better at this, man.
Yeah, it's like this part of your job, you have to get better at this.
And I would now watch a Prowler movie because of that one scene. That's what I mean about shared universe. Like, I would watch any of these characters. Like, I think Scorpion, so my theory is Scorpion is going to be in Black Cat. And I think Scorpion is going to be a bigger universe shared thing guy because of how they're building him. Because he's great on Better Call Saul. So I think that actor is going to be a big connecting tissue along with Venom, along with these characters. And I think we might eventually get Sinister Six, which would be incredible. anything you didn't like?
Well, I said about the Aunt May, like trying to gag up the age thing. I think we've got an ageism thing that like just happens with movies in general, especially when it pertains to women. Let's see, something else that I didn't particularly enjoy. No, I already said about how I wish that there had been a bit more battering, you know, like with him as a, you know, filling up that his whole Superman.
Yeah, you know.
Superhero.
I like how minimalist Tony Stark was. I like how we said that that's probably all he's in is what he's in the trailer. He had like one more scene. And I liked that. I love Pepper coming back.
Yeah, I love that she was just in that part. And it's like, well, what else? We have all these people. I'll be like, hey, you still have that ring since 2008?
So good. And that scene is literally what leads into the Civil War scene of Spider-Man. Like when he unmasks. Yeah. I love that they literally had a comic reference outside of a door. Like had that choice been made, it was like, and here's this comic scene. Oh, nope, next time.
It's like, nope, next time. I something that I didn't like, but not with the movie, but something I just didn't like with adults. The way that they treated him so much like a kid and like did not let him in on anything where he's just giving nightly reports, he's just texting Happy and he's hearing nothing back. Adults are dicks, because I'm very certain but that adults I've done that dicks. In the past. Where it's just like, oh, okay, calm down, kid.
When do you listen to a 15 year old that are true, you know what I mean? Like that thing is it's very, and that was such a fun different movie because of it was John Hughes. Like the scenes of him talking to Liz in that hallway, like that moment of like when he walks by her, like, oh, I gotta go by you. Like there were so many moments that were so real, and I don't know, this was up there with Winter Soldier for me.
Okay, I know something that I didn't like. I didn't like that Tinkerer was the only other smart bad guy besides for Victor, aside from Tombs being, you know, I wanted Shocker to be smart.
Okay.
I really wanted that with, Bokeem Woodbine. I wanted him to be smart, just because from when you and Landis were on here before,
y'all went into all of the Shocker stuff.
I researched a bit more Shocker, he's intelligent. He built that in prison, you know, kind of a thing. And I just didn't get any of that.
The first thing I told Max when I got out of the movie was like, bro, Shocker. They did it. They got Shocker. Because I think the next movie, and if they bring Bokeem Woodbine back for Shocker, it'll be like that merciless, calculated, gotta get it. His tenacity is what Shocker is.
Yeah, I want them to up that.
I really do.
Because it was just a bit too, I don't know, just throwaway. It was just a bit too throwaway. So kill the first one, great. Have this one turn that up.
And I think he's swinging up. I think that he definitely was more that than almost Tom Hardy. Yeah. So I think that direction's going in that way. I loved that they use the vulture like they do in the comics. I love him like flying and attacking like a vulture. And I love every speech he had like a scavenger theme to it. That big speech when they were like that big wide, when Michael Keaton was on this side of the room and he was threatening him in the side of the room, how powerful he felt when he was leaning against a thing talking about scavenging. Like every character felt like a comic villain, but not cheesy.
It was solid. It was really good. It was super enjoyable. I've been trying to take friends that aren't interested in seeing any Marvel movie.
That's a great mid-range.
I'm like, this is the one. I won't take you to see Civil War because
it's dense.
You'll be sitting there kind of like looking at me through your, you know, side
Sokovia
eye
course.
Until they get to the Black Panther part, and then they'll be on board because everybody is.
Those 20 minutes, full attention, guys.
And then the Spider-Man part in that. I would show them Spider-Man Homecoming and be like, hey, you want to watch Civil War? Spider-Man
That's
it.
And there's literally a scene in Spider-Man Homecoming showing Civil War, so you can show them the other side of that camera angle.
So there you go.
I personally, it's the one I want to talk about most. So by all means, guys, tweet, Instagram, contact us. We want to talk about this movie.
Yes, tweet us. Let's talk about this.
There's so much
more.
Every
little bit.
There's so much more.
This is just what we could cover right now in the time that we have.
That's what I just realized what time it was. So basically, guys, it's an hour and 45 minute movie. I could talk about it for an hour and 45. So please reach out. We'll talk more. I can be found on Twitter and Instagram at CoyJandreau. I do interviews on Instagram, and I basically try to give you guys all the info. And I will be doing two or three on Spider-Man constantly. And you can be found where?
We don't have any time for
that. We don't have time.
Sorry. We'll give you shout-outs on Twitter and all the such.
There's birthdays. Gamer Girl's birthday. Gamer Girl's been OG since episode one. So Gamer Girl, very special birthday. There's a few others. Do you want to run real quick?
Do you want to do that? For shout-outs, I don't have birthdays particular on this. I have a list of shout-outs.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I have the Emmanuel Fuentes at Star Wars Nerd 9. Sunday was my birthday. Can I maybe have a special Koi sexy shout-out?
Speed sexy. Happy birthday.
Yeah, baby. And sometimes there's a quickie. Otherwise than that, yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Markeia McCarty, MarkeiaMccarty. I think I said at the top about my Snapchat
The Mighty Guy 2421, happy birthday. Josh Pearson, happy birthday. Daryl Feldman sent me an amazing mural. And lastly, I did Deezus Take the Wheels podcast. It was so much fun. We'll make time for shout outs next week because we got a few that we want to catch you guys.
Yes.
We are out of time. Spider-Man's amazing. Go see it. Tweet us. We love you guys. And thanks. That's all this week. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.